at that point, we will end the work session and we'll gavel in to the actual meeting of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you. We have 2 hours. So now, would anybody like to go out and get a little bit more food? Everyone seems so nice and calm and relaxed. I don't know. But all right. We're going to open this up to first for public comment. Anyone would like to speak today? Come on up. Please state your name.
My name is Mike Altizer. I'm a member of the Roanoke County Board of Supervisors. I want to speak on item number 11, Route 116, which we all know here is Windy Gap Mountain. Today you're about to make an important decision based on the fact of the length and size of tractor trailers that come over this mountain. And to sort of give you a little of a prelude of what this mountain looks like, it's pretty sharp curves. They go out of one and go into another. And any one of you that may be a NASCAR fan, you can envision some of these curves at the banking of a Charlotte Motor Speedway. But what we have here, we're starting to experience many accidents. It's increased over the last 2 or 3 years. I experienced last year when we had a tractor trailer doing 10 miles an hour coming down with 70 heads of cattle that went into a curve at 10 miles an hour and turned that tractor trailer over. And I witnessed 60 head of cattle either already killed in the accident or had to be euthanized there. Lord help us if there had been a car coming around that curve at the same time that this happened. From October 16th to October 29th, just a couple of months here back, we've had 4 accidents in 13 days on that mountain, all involving tractor trailers. And I commend VDOT who have put these very big noticeable signs that sit way up into the sky that you can't miss, that says, you know, their point being 46 feet or longer, you know, you shouldn't use this, and they still use it. All of these that have come in, and I know that, you know, there are computer or some metrics that can be done that shows what you can navigate this road safely. But what these symmetrics do, they do not take into account human error. And virtually every one of these accidents that occur on this mountain is because of human error. Jointly between our board and Franklin County Board, we have adopted a resolution that asks that anything over 28 feet in length be banned from coming over 116. Now, that's over Windy Gap. That doesn't mean certainly that tractor trailers are not able to use and access businesses before they get to the mountain. They just have to go back to the other way they came. Or if they come from the 116 side of Roanoke County, we have one business right at the base of the mountain. Absolutely, they can go there, but they have to go back the way they came. You know, this board many times has decisions to make, and you know are the right decisions, and you're prohibited by doing that because of funding mechanisms or the lack of funds to do this. I would dare say this is one of the decisions that you can make that I believe is going to save personal injury and God forbid, death on this mountain, and it doesn't involve any form of funding whatsoever. Just in the one that we had actually on October 16th, tractor trailer got locked up in the curve, and we talk about human error, and an SUV come around the other side of the curve and T-boned that tractor trailer right in the curve. They were on it before they even knew they were there. So I would hope and I would ask that you support the joint resolution that Roanoke County and Franklin County has passed and endorsed unanimously, that we put a restriction on that part of 116 not to exceed 28 feet in length.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure, go ahead.
at the adoption of the resolutions, was there objection at your meeting and the public hearing that you held on that adoption?
There was no objection from any business or constituents at our public hearing, and talking to Mr. Wagner when Franklin County had theirs, there was no opposition at their public meeting either.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments? Okay. At this point, we're closing out public comment period. Oh, man. I thought I'd get away. Come on up.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
By the way, I thought you were Bob Chase, so it's getting a little bit. That's why I was trying to move it
fast. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Michael Roop. I'm president of the Mount Pleasant Civic League in Roanoke County, and I'm here today to speak in support of agenda item number 11, restricting the truck length on Route 116. We support the resolution approved by the Roanoke County Board of Supervisors for trailer length limits of 28 feet. And our supervisor's commitment of being proactive in public safety. When we look at different roadways throughout Virginia, you talk to people who drive the highways, and if you ask them about I-77, they talk about fog on Fancy Gap and the accidents that happen there. You talk about I-74, first thing comes to mind with drivers is Afton Mountain. We feel that Route 116 is headed toward the same path of infamy if something's not done. Recurring tractor-trailer accidents and non-collision incidents cause rerouting of traffic to secondary roads that are not designed for that kind of traffic, and they can run through residential areas that can create other hazards. But think back to how many times we've seen on TV people will come before boards like this, and they'll have a picture of a loved one that they've lost. Thankfully, I'm not here today to present a similar scenario. But what about next year or the year after? Today, the CPB has an opportunity to endorse our county leadership in being proactive on their support, on their position of Route 116 safety. I hope this board will support this measure, and on behalf of the Mount Pleasant Civic League members, I want to thank you for your consideration and the opportunity to speak for you here today. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Okay. At this point, we're going to have the minutes of October 20th, 2010. Are there any changes, modifications?
Move to adopt. Second.
So I take that as no. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you very much. We'll go to the Local Assistance Division. Ms. Brown.
Okay. Good afternoon. I have three items for you. Fortunately, I'll start with the easy stuff first. First, we have a request for Economic Development Access Funds. This request is in the Stanton District. Shenandoah County has a request for funding for the North Shenandoah Industrial Park. We are recommending the maximum allocation of $650,000 for this project, and we recommend this for approval.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Ayes have it. Thank you very much.
Okay. The second item is a request for recreational access funds. This is in the Culpeper District in Culpeper County for the Lynn Brothers Park. And their request is for $207,000 to provide access for their park. Also, we recommend this for approval.
Mr. Chairman, I move
adoption. Do we have a second? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it.
And, of course, the last item is request for action on the policy on the Transportation Enhancement Program. You heard our recommendations earlier, and you have a resolution in your package for consideration.
Move for approval. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Ayes have it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Right-of-way division. Mr. Bennett.
Yes, sir. I have three parcels of excess right-of-way that I'm requesting your permission to sell or convey. The first item, 4A, is in the town of South Boston in the Lynchburg District, and it's a small strip of right-of-way to be conveyed to the town.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick point, and we may get this in future meetings, again, being relatively new, I'm not sure, but could we, as a board, get a report when these surplus properties are sold as to what they are sold for, and running inventory of kind of what we've accumulated in funds from that.
Sure. Sure. I don't think, I mean, when you sell it, you're not looking at what the...
Well, at some points, we don't have the value established when we're bringing it to the board for their action. We do provide an annual report of the number of parcels that we've sold, which is somewhere, you know, unless we have something very valuable, around, you know, $2 to $3 million a year.
My point is just for a point of information to follow, is that each parcel, when it is sold, if we could just get that total,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all, because lumping them together, we don't know whether some, you know, small little things are insignificant, but when we're coming back to some of the district areas where the surplus buildings and things like that are sold, it's kind of, it would be nice, at least from my point of view, to know what the revenue from that sale is.
Yep, that's fine. That'd be fun. And by the way, this you know, there's this never-ending battle between for truth, justice, and the American way between BDOT doing the right, you know, doing the surplus property sales versus DGS. When BDOT does it, it comes back into the CTF. And it goes back to the CTF itself, or the
Yes, it will come back to the CTF.
If the actual fund, it will go into the general fund.
The funding is allocated by system and back into the locality for that, but it all comes back to VDOT.
Yeah, so this is a never-ending battle. DGS wants to take all this over, but if it goes to them, it goes to the general fund. Is that?
We know that DGS is want to handle that, and we know that they're going to be charging a fee for it. We don't know all the details in terms of where the revenue
will actually end up. Mr. Peek? No, motion?
I'll move to
approve. You have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. Ayes have it.
Item B is in the Richmond District. It's a small parcel located adjacent to the Amelia Bypass.
Mr. McCarthy?
Approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Item C is in the town of Cape Charles, and it's once again another small parcel of excess right away.
Move sector.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. All right.
I also have three actions on limited access control change. Item 5A is on I-66 in Arlington County, just south of Roslyn. It affects the right-of-way on Interstate 66 between the Pedestrian Plaza and the Theodore Roosevelt Bridge. It's a 42-foot shift in the limited access line, which would allow, and sometime in the future, for a county street to be shifted over in connection with a development area there. We've determined the future needs for I-66, including shoulder improvements, and that this land is not needed in order to be able to accompany that. I will note that in the resolution that we did receive a letter from the National Park Service, you know, asking the CTB to defer action on this limited access control change because they are concerned about the site plan development process. However, the National Park Service in Arlington County is an active member of that process that would take place, you know, once the board makes this decision as to whether or not the limited access line can change. Anybody has any additional questions?
Mr. Rich?
Would this in any way impede expansion of 66 inside the Beltway?
We have looked at this section. This is the small section between the pedestrian plaza at Roslyn and the actual bridge, including the Route 50, you know, interchange there, and have determined that there's no additional lanes that could be added in that section anyway. The only improvements that we could make in the future would be wider shoulders on the median side, and we did allow enough space to facilitate that if the funding was ever made available for it.
Yeah, I should say, I went out and took a look at this because somebody raised it to me. And I mean, essentially, it's going to shift was almost an alley. That's essentially this Arlington Road there, and it's not. I mean, it's going to go in a little bit into, but there's no way you can have any further expansion right there because it's right after you come through Roslyn, going towards Washington before you hit the Teddy Roosevelt Bridge. Mr. Garzinski.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of
Mr. Coolbay could not be with us. He said he has worked extensively with VDOT and with Mr. Milliken from Arlington on the private side, John Milliken, on this, and would appreciate the support of his fellow commissioners on the board on this site.
Ms. Ellis, if you have
Is this one of those leftover parcels, when it was originally, you know, right-of-way was originally acquired?
We acquired right-of-way all the way from the interstate over to the local street. So, yes, it is an extra area in there we've determined, you know, that is adjacent to the existing street that is not actually needed at this time. It is part of the right-of-way, though. That's why the board action is required.
Mr. Karzinski?
I'd like to make a motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. Ayes have it.
Mr. Secretary, item B is out in the Bristol District. It's just west of Galax and involves providing a limited access break that will be used for the Department of Forestry. They received a piece of property that was dedicated to them outside of that and require access to be able to utilize it.
Move its approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it.
Item C is in the Richmond District. It's out at 288 and Route 16 near Midlothian. During the original project, we made provisions that a east-west connector roadway could be constructed under a bridge adjacent to the railroad track. However, we did not adjust the limited access line at that time to allow that to happen, and we're requesting at this time that the limited access be pulled back to allow for that roadway to be constructed.
Mr. McCarthy?
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. The ayes have it. Programming Division, Ms. Buescher.
Agenda item number six, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, is the addition of projects to the six-year improvement program. The list of projects are on Appendix A. These, the major fund source, as you look at this, is all types of safety funds, bike ped safety, HSIP, high-risk rural, that's the HRRR. These are funds either from the safety balance entry or removed from inactive projects and put on new projects that we hope to get obligated in this federal fiscal year.
Any questions?
Total about $11
million. We have a motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you very much.
Agenda item seven is program transfers between projects. These are transfers greater than 10% from the donor project that require your approval. We created a new document to go along with this monthly resolution, so it's easier to see what district, what system, and the donor UPC to the recipient UPC. We have some savings going from one project to another as a result of either a project closeout, low bids, and money that can be moved. Some RSCP, some interstate safety. So we're trying to get those monies moving by transferring them.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. King.
Rita, does this involve some transfers of money from one district to another?
In this case, no. As you can see, the donor and the recipient, Bristol to Bristol, Fredericksburg to Fredericksburg, Nova to Nova, Richmond to Richmond. Now, we do have some miscellaneous funds that are coming from inactive projects that have been closed. Generally, we put those in the statewide miscellaneous for further distribution, and that happens to be going to the Hampton Roads project to be able to obligate that Route 58 project.
Have a motion? Ms. Ellis, I'm sorry.
Rita, yes. The Hampton Roads project, is that in Suffolk at 58 in Suffolk?
Can you help me with that, Aubrey?
Yeah, I don't think it's in Suffolk.
Virginia Beach, I apologize.
Virginia Beach, yes. It's the new London Bridge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, London Bridge.
J. Beach Boulevard.
I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Administrative Services. Mr. Campbell.
Yes, sir. I'm Randy Campbell from the Administrative Services Division. last year, the General Assembly directed VDOT to identify properties no longer in active use that could be returned to private use. And we have done that assessment, and in the resolution before you today, there are 13 properties listed that can be declared surplus to VDOT. We have thoroughly reviewed this with district staff and with VDOT management, and these properties are surplus. As stated in the resolution, state law requires that the board approve these properties as surplus and also approve their conveyance of these properties. And with your approval, we would proceed to process and sell, dispose of these properties. And as you mentioned a few minutes ago, these would have to go through the DGS process.
They will have to go through the DGS.
Yes, sir.
So how much money are they going to steal from us?
We don't have appraisals on each property, but we have talked with our appraisal section about each piece of property. In total, overall, we're estimating probably in the range of $2.5 to $2.7 million. And I have a number for each property listed here that we developed in cooperation with the appraisal people in right away.
Mr. Chairman, Brandon, I guess the question was, once the property is sold by DGS, they take a fee for selling the property.
Right.
But then they return the net.
To the mine, it's in the law, I feel it's 2.2-1153, I believe. It talks about special fund agencies, and I've talked to DGS about this, and it's my understanding that after they do an appraisal, you know, cover the cost of an appraisal, perhaps the cost of a survey, and then the cost of the services, of DGS's services or their consultant, the funds remaining after that come back, and as I understand it, go back into the construction fund for VDOT.
Okay, all right, but I want to understand, I would like you to come back to me and outline how much, just take a typical piece of property, you tell me how much if you sold it, we would be sending back into the transportation, Commonwealth Transportation Fund, versus them selling it.
That requires that I, let's see, say your Amherst residence is worth, we estimate about $620,000, I think.
But DGS...
Right. Now, DGS is going to do an appraisal, and we're going to pay a couple $1,000s for that, I estimate. Some cost more than others. They may have to do a survey, which will be another couple $1,000s. And then DGS or their consultant will charge us, and I'm saying perhaps a couple $1,000s. So maybe $10,000 to $15,000 will go to cover the expenses. And then of that, say, if it was $620,000, I think we'd get back probably $605,000.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think your question was, could we give you an analysis of what it would cost if I sold the property versus what it would if the DGS sold the property? And then I think we can give you some analysis on that.
I'll locate an example that, you know, an actual occurrence, if you like. Some of them only valued these properties at $1,200 and others $2.5 million.
But I understand. I say each piece, I just need to understand the framework so that if you just took their framework and our framework, let's say we had a $1 million piece of property, just pro forma, how much would come back to transportation versus how much it would take off the top versus...
Okay. I'll give you... I'll work up...
I need something sort of formal. Okay?
Okay.
I'm going to have a little fun.
Do we have a choice, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, we got lots of choices in life.
Okay.
Give me a couple days, and I'll have you something.
All right. Because this is a never-ending struggle for truth, justice, and the...
I understand.
Commonwealth way. And so
I'm
we are going to make sure this money was bought with transportation funds, and it all should stay within the transportation program. Okay, so.
Mr. Chairman, I have another little concern, too. I just want to be sure that the sale of these properties makes really good sense long term, because with the adjustments that were made in the residencies and in providing services out in the Stanton District, for instance, I know for a fact that some of these areas are going to have to be reopened again in the future when they discover how unable they're going to be to provide services in some of these areas. And I'm really wondering what the process was to decide on getting rid of these properties, because I look at these and they're in areas that are very difficult to be served by residency offices that are some distance away, and storing materials and whatever else it might be necessary. I just want to be sure that somebody has really looked at this, and we're not going to have to go back and buy property to provide those services in some of these areas. And these properties became surplus. I don't know, some of them may have become surplus a long time ago, but I have a feeling a lot of ones in my district became surplus just recently.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Morley. I can comment. I was going to comment that initially we identified 48 properties. Of those, we identified 15 that we did not want. They're vacant. We're not using them, so we're going to lease them if we can to the private sector or another state agency or someone else. But we're not going to get rid of those properties.
Very good. That makes
and that leaves sense. That leaves 33, and this is 13 of those 33.
That sounds better. Because I really believe that we were very aggressive in closing properties and may regret it in the not-too-distant future.
Well, I know Mr. Worley was very very interested in that very same issue.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Mr. Richards.
The money goes back into to VDOT. I'm glad of that. Is it broken down by construction district when it comes back? So if something is sold in Culpeper, for example, it'll go back to Culpeper or Stanton or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, the funds for when we sell property that was acquired with capital outlay funds does not necessarily go back to that district because that's a statewide kind of fund that we use to purchase property. So it would go back to that statewide capital outlay account. However, property that we acquire on the construction side, like right-of-way, and when we sell that property for surplus and we sell it, those funds go back to that particular district.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? I have a motion.
Move approval.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Mr. Lynch, how are you?
Good. Good afternoon. I'm here to for action on the authorization to enter into an MOU with the City of Alexandria, the Maryland State Highway Administration, and VDOT to upgrade the fire protection system for the Wilson Bridge, and this is for the design phase. The city wants to update the fire protection system. The current system runs from a standpipe that's charged by a fire boat that goes out to the bridge and pumps water from the Potomac. They wanted to install a remote-actuated pump so that they can do that while their emergency vehicles go up on the bridge, so that at the time the vehicles get up there, the water's charged and they're ready to go. They've secured funding from the D.C. Homeland Security Emergency Management Agency for the design. And so we're here to ask your to provide your authorization to proceed with the design phase through an MOU.
Mr. Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. Why wasn't this done with the original bridge project?
Well, the original bridge project, they put in the standpipe system and they actually implemented this system. I think the city went back and they did a trial run that they felt that it took too long to get the system charged because the fire engine was up on the bridge waiting for the system to be charged. So it's a time issue after the fact.
So the first design, and then they're going back and doing a redesign.
Well, it's not again, the existing system's adequate. It's just they're looking for a more timely response.
Mr. Chairman, I was there for the dedication of the bridge, and they demonstrated the tugboats pumping the water out in the stomach that would charge the system, and I think they thought it was adequate at that time, but I think it makes sense to have a more permanent installation than to wait for a boat to go out and pump water for an area, for a bridge that's so important. for transportation.
And I have to give a great deal of accolades to VDOT on this. I've been kind of went after them about this one when I was made aware of the situation after meeting with the city. And, you know, listen, let's just face it, we don't know what will happen. It could be ice on the river. It could be the fire boat would be down for such an important bridge, such an expensive project for $350,000. Let's just be nice. But I realized from an engineering perspective what was there was adequate. For something like this, it just, for not a lot of money, and I appreciate the, because originally I was pushing Mr. Worley to pay for it out of our funds, the fact that you guys were able to find, get a Homeland Security money to put against this is perfect. So I think it's just great you guys stayed on it, and I think it's a very good public safety initiative that's going to, at some point, unfortunately, probably weigh out, the costs are going to be outweighed by the benefits of that.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the ayes have it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Mr. Lynch. I'm sorry. So when do we make you permanent?
did
they make you permanent? I was saying, when did it become permanent? I thought you were only in permanent. When did that happen?
Back in May.
And you didn't come back, and we didn't like bring you before the board and like the initiation and all that.
You got me in trouble,
John. John, congratulations! I'll be talking to my interim commissioner. Maintenance, Mr. Rell.
Good afternoon. The first item has to do with the rest area programs. As all of you know, the governor has charged us with looking at ways to enhance revenue opportunities at the rest areas. And even though by federal law we're not able to sell them off or otherwise totally privatize their operation, we've been working with our great partners, the Virginia Tourism Corporation and the Department for the Visually Blind, Visually Handicapped. And we've got memorandums of agreement that are ready to be signed between the three agencies to pool all of the money-making opportunities, including the advertisement of tourism information and all types of vending opportunities that we could possibly have someone come in and offer to do for us. And so we have developed an RFP to see what kind of things we can get from the marketplace by bundling up all of these opportunities for money-making within the confines of the federal law. There are some restrictions of things that you can't sell at rest areas like fuel and automotive parts, petroleum products. So there are some restrictions. But other than that, it's pretty wide open as what we might be able to sell. So we're going to be sending an RFP and hopefully getting some very innovative proposals about what could be done to improve the sales and revenues from advertising within the confines of the buildings that can be done.
ATMs.
Yes.
ATMs.
Yes. Hopefully lottery machines as well.
What's up? Federal law restricts us in terms of the outsourcing of these. I'm trying to, like, can
yes.
we say, hey, McDonald's, Burger King,
it's restricted.
We can't do that.
No, we're not allowed to do that.
We can't sell fuel,
no.
parts, fuel products.
Right.
So we're talking about just within the existing building? What?
Yes, well, this would be, yes, this would, you know, within the confines of the Welcome Center areas,
okay.
there are advertising opportunities for tourism sites. There also are opportunities for sponsorships of flower beds, I mean, all kinds of things. So there are those kinds of things. In addition, there are lots of things you can put in a vending machine from products from the Tourism Council, like Virginia's Lovers T-shirts and all sorts of other things.
In the visitor center, we can't
right.
a corner or sell corner to Starbucks to have a coffee bar.
No, they could have a they could have a vending machine. You know, you could have, I think about in Europe, you know, you have all kinds of little vending machines. Some of them are hot vending machines. You know, you can get a hot croquette, you know, type of thing. So you might have pizza vending or something like that. So, but maybe there's some other things that we don't know about, and that's the part of getting this in.
Following on that, I know it's been discussed a lot about not allowing Dunkin' Donuts or anything like that coming in. But it seems to be a fine line between putting in vending machines, which I don't think are that appealing to tourist travel, as opposed to having a full-service product that's there. You're still talking about someone operating those vending machines, which seems to be splitting hairs on private sector use of these facilities. We're talking about not having petroleum products, which I understand that because of some of the environmental issues we may get into, which makes it difficult, but we're going to put plug-ins for hybrid cars, which are going in these facilities. So I'm wondering if times haven't changed enough. I mean, the Florida Turnpike, the Ohio Turnpike, I know a lot of these others are doing that. Again, I get the excuse that, well, it's a turnpike, but times have changed, including economic times, to the point that the federal government should ease up a little bit about how they tell us to use our own existing property. And I'm wondering what we're doing to kind of convince them to move along that line instead of just saying, okay, we're going to put in vending machines.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Davis.
This past year, Frank Wolf introduced a bill to allow privatization, and it was shot down overwhelmingly.
2-1.
In Congress. Now, whether or not something else can be mounted, the lobby, I heard from them vociferously when I got involved with rest area discussions a year ago, and they do not want our rest areas commercialized, and they are very, very active politically in Washington, and they're listened to by congressmen more than I ever dreamed.
Mr. Secretary.
I'm not arguing heavy commercialization, because in most of these locations there's not enough area to broaden that footprint so much, because we have to go procure land to include the extra parking and everything else that would go along with that. But what I'm looking at is, when I look back at point 12 here, or 13, excuse me, there's a section in there that says that we're going to be spending $12 million to maintain these facilities. If we have a type of arrangement, unless there's something in the works to do that, where the people that are in there benefiting from having their vending machines and whatever are responsible for mowing the grass, maintaining the restrooms and all, I don't see some of the benefit we could maybe get out of looking at a little bit different arrangement in some of these locations.
Mr. Secretary, members of the board, today we make about $2.2 million a year on the existing revenues from vending machines. One of the options that people proposing under the RFP could include things like, you know, building some additional buildings or somehow renovating or improving the existing facilities to allow for some other types of commercial types of ventures. This has been a longstanding federal restriction to prohibit any competition by retail businesses such as, 7-Eleven or McDonald's or any of those things from existing on the interstate. And even when Senator Warner was chairman of the Senate committee that oversaw ICE-T and the Safety Lou legislation, he was unable to make any progress with changing the law to allow those kinds of commercial establishments to come into the properties. We certainly would agree that it would be beneficial to have this competition, quite frankly. There's a lot of competition at the interchanges today where you can have a McDonald's and a Burger King can move in next door to you. So, you know, the unfortunate situation we find ourselves in is that federal law is pretty specific about prohibiting those kinds of commercial ventures. So we're trying to do what we can to see what other things are possible, and maybe there's some things that we at VDOT haven't even thought about, but that we would get those in an RFP process. We could negotiate with the company to see all the different kinds of advertising, sponsorship, or vending or other opportunities that might be allowed within the law to help us offset the cost. Because it is about, the total cost of the rest areas has been about $18 to $20 million a year. And, of course, part of that is because of the wastewater treatment plants that many of them have that we are required to operate. So it's not just mowing the grass and cleaning the toilets.
But it is employee cost associated with that that the Commonwealth is paid, including their retirement and everything.
No, sir.
Is it through contract then?
Yes, sir. The entire operation is contracted to the lowest bidder.
So they're privatized but not commercialized.
But yes, the contracted service. And I don't want to belabor this, but the only thing of it is that you're looking at putting in machines that have hot products or this piece or whatever. You're looking at some other things that might go on that line. You're looking at bubble gum and other things, or chewing gum and toothpaste and all going in. And I would argue that's some of the similar things other than beer and wine that 7-Eleven provides that is direct competition to them. Although it's in a vending machine as opposed to a separate building. And I know what battle we're up against with the federal government. Sometimes with everything else that they do, it's total incompetence. But what troubles me is that we cannot seem to convince our own delegation plus others to see where we could benefit from this. And not all the convenience store people and everybody else. I mean, it's an opportunity, and I think we always look at it as well.
Yes, not all of the Virginia congressional delegation support this change in the law.
Mr. Lane,
I appreciate it.
I happen to deal with this quite a bit in my business, and I would encourage the state to look at upfront bonuses.
Yes.
Because that's a big part. And I would also encourage you to look at cable providers, whether you want to offer an Internet service, because they're looking to expand their networks. I don't know if that's in the vending, but that's something that I would encourage you to look at.
Yes, we actually tried to solicit Internet wireless providers a few years ago, but we couldn't get it for no cost or a fee.
I think that market has changed pretty significantly.
So those are exactly the types of things that we hope will come in these RFPs. And so the reason I'm here today before you is there is a set of regulatory provisions under the Administrative Process Act. And without having to go through the 8 or 10 or 12 month period it would require to change the Administrative Process Act to kind of redo some of these rest area rules and regulations, we've come up with a way to just open up and expand what's allowed under an attachment to one of those regulations. And so what we're asking you to do today is to pass this resolution that basically would update this attachment that says that lots of other opportunities exist, including all these other categories.
So we have a motion?
Motion for approval.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next item, you've already heard two very eloquent gentlemen from the Roanoke.
Mr. Martin.
Yes, I do request a privilege to speak after they vote.
No, aren't you going to?
I move.
Second? Anyone have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, Mr. Martin.
I wanted to take advantage of an opportunity that I don't feel that. The professional staff does get criticized, and with varying degrees of justification. This, however, is a case where I want everyone to know they could very easily have taken a textbook and totally blown off this request. Now, it might be simply that they wrote out there, and the common sense brain overrode the big brain, but... certainly, this was an example of them doing the right thing as well as the correct thing. I want to also pursue it to Mr. King. I think the reason that 100% of the businesses supported this move had to do with the fact that the professional truck drivers and the local truck drivers know to keep away from that place. And what I discovered in looking into this thing is the accidents are all involving GPS. And local governments have no facility to warn, to get GPS companies to change what they're telling people. So this was definitely a case of us keeping up with technology and doing what should be doing. So, I commend the professionals.
Well, thank you, Mr. Martin. You were talking about the old VDOT. This is the new, better, much improved.
Right. Yes. Well, I want to say that Richard K. Wood and Ken King did, and their staff, they do an excellent job, and this has been a concern. So we were very, very pleased to be able to act on this.
Hauling permits.
Excuse me?
Hauling permits.
Yes. Very quickly. Some years ago, the General Assembly sought to consolidate everything related to trucks and truck regulation over into DMV from two or three different agencies, including VDOT. And we had had for many years a hauling permit manual. And so one of the things that the law required DMV to do was to establish their own manual, which they have finally done. And so now we can repeal ours.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Keene.
Question. I think this came up last month. Well, not last month, month before.
A couple of months ago, yeah.
And there was a question that I asked about tram permits versus hauling permits.
Yes.
And we're eliminating a manual that controls permits that we're continuing to issue. And my question is, does this impact tram permits?
It does not.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, thank you very much. Let's get the bids.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary, could I just mention that even though the rest area bids did come in at about $12 million, it was a $1.2 million a year savings and about $7 or $8 million over the life of the projects for these contracts of about 5 years. So we did get some cost savings in these latest contracts. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. Yes, Ms. Latimer.
I do want to compliment the group. I think they've done an excellent job looking at the various aspects of that, and I guess I get a little testy with some of the federal government telling us how we're going to do things when it's in the state owns the property and everything else.
I resemble that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Board, we had two lettings in October 27th and November 17th. Resulting in this recommendation to award 15 construction contracts in the amount of about $90 million, six administrative service division contracts for property and maintenance of safety rest areas amounting to $12 million, and one design build contract amounting to $38
million. Any reason not to take them out of the package?
Why don't we take them out of the package? Great bids again, huh?
The bids are very competitive, and there's a lot of competition for each project that's
When you
that's
look
advertised.
At them, they're coming in at least 20, 25% below your estimate?
Generally speaking, they're probably cumulatively 3 to 4% under, but we are seeing some small projects that are 20% under. So if we're talking dollar values, we're probably in that 3 to 4, 5% under range. We're talking in the number of projects under value. We're probably talking about 95% of the projects.
All right, so you just got to explain, before we vote on it, I just have, let's go to page two.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I look at CN from six-year program, $5.6 million, let's just say, from that G01. Bid amount is 3.8.
Yeah.
You say 5.6. Am I reading that wrong?
No, you're correct, Mr. Secretary. In my mind is all the projects. There's another 28 million or 32 projects that Commissioner Worley signs. So I'm kind of taking the whole thing in aggregate. And there's a lot of small projects in here too that y'all don't see. There's 32 projects in here that's in my head that's not.
Wait a second. When you tell me when we go through the ones we deal with,
yeah,
we're coming in at 2/3, but the ones he kind of deals with, you're right on the money. When are we?
No, they're still under.
Where's Wanda? Wanda, where's my IG? I want to make sure I understand why there's a difference. Can we mind if we take this as a package?
Mr. Trevor, can I ask one question?
Yes, Ms. Miller.
One of these just stuck out, and it's kind of weird. I think it says page one, but they all say page one. It's F82 under primary.
Yeah.
So we had it 6 years at $11 million and comes out at $23 million.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that was the one.
What's with that?
Mr.
Worley did handle.
That's the one Worley handled. It was a...
He kicked it back to us.
That one stuck in.
It added up a lot of savings. So we just...
Canal of Stone.
This one right here.
The bridge replacement, so I mean, I guess...
What page is that?
I can...
F82 on
page one. One of the, I can address two of the variables why that came in so high. The estimator who did that underestimated the impact of the railroad and the amount of trains that pass that location each day. And every time a train comes by, depending on where the construction is, they have to pull away a certain distance from the train. They missed that, and they also missed some difficulties with the, I know it says Kanawana Stone Company in West Virginia. There were some stone issues that were not locally available here. So the stone price plus the logistics of coordinating work with the trains is what bumped the price up.
So first, you know,
yeah,
it's a little scary.
What is that number underneath? The 8?
That's the cumulative saving behind.
No, that's just the construction cost from the 6-year plan, the eight million. The total price.
So it's design, engineer, everything else right away. It's the top one.
I think this is the most I've seen us at one time take action on. So I'm not too busy.
Good. All those in favor? Did we vote?
Aye.
Not yet.
All those in favor? Do I have a motion?
No.
Approved. All right. We have a second. Now we do. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Excellent. Let's get a little ahead
Thank
of
you.
Myself. Thank you. So. All right. New business. Now, I'm sorry. Under our rules, do we have to do a motion to amend the agenda for an action item? No? Go ahead. Ms. Garzinski.
Yes, I would like, as the governor's representative on the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority, I think it's my responsibility to bring this motion forward to amend the FY 2011-2016 6-year plan that would allow Herndon hybrid vehicles to be purchased under the CMAQ program. I do this, you all received a letter from Chairman Noe, and I do it for two reasons. Number one, we had set a precedent in the past doing this. They were funded in 2007 and 2008. And until this brought the matter to the attention of the CTB and maybe new policies, they were operating under the existing program, which basically gave the responsibility or the delegation of the ability to spend this money to the MTOs, and in this case, to NVTA. So I think I have to bring that motion forward.
Do you have a second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Discussion.
Discussion.
Respectfully, I'm going to vote against this. While I recognize that we delegated that authority to them in the past, this has been sort of accepted in the past, and it may meet the letter of the law. I don't think it meets the spirit of what CMAQ is trying to achieve. I could understand it if these hybrid vehicles were being used for public transit. To me, this is, you're using them for the municipal fleet, the replacement of the municipal fleet, which is really a responsibility of the locality to fund their own operations, including their municipal fleet. CMAQ funds, they should be applying towards the things which are going to actually mitigate the congestion and the various problems that they would have within that locality. So I'm going to vote against this. I kind of hope that there is a vote against this. I'm not jumping up and down on the table about it, but I really think we need to start to send a message that we're looking at these things for not only do they meet the letter of the law, but do they really achieve the purpose for which the funds were intended.
Mr. Miller?
Ms. Sterling, would you support some sort of message, not in this vote, but beyond this vote, that goes to these organizations to make that clear? I mean, I'm kind of guided by the fact we did it 2 years ago, we did it 3 years ago, we didn't tell them anything differently, we gave them the authorization in our blanket authorization, and now we're saying, well, we don't like that. So I'm kind of on both sides, but I agree with you. But I'm kind of like, the horse is out of the barn on this one. I'd like to stem the flow on the next one.
I think we're going down that path with the establishment of the subcommittee to look at this, and I agree on that aspect. But just because it was done wrong in the past, in my judgment wrong, doesn't mean that we necessarily have to approve it in the future. Right.
Mr. Rich.
I concur with Mr. Sterling on this. From what I understand from the locality, they have gotten our message and are looking at other CMAQ things that can be done that make more sense. And I think, as Mr. Sterling says, we've got to start sometime. You know, they say you'll never have tax reform because of the transition rules will be horrendous, or we'll never be able to start to balance a federal budget because you don't want to start cutting now. I think we saw how out of whack this program is, and I think it's our fiduciary responsibility just to start now, and let's have the reform. And the message is getting out, the letter came in, they know that we're thinking about reform, so let's just bite the bullet and reform.
Ms. Lane?
Can we do that based on giving them delegating our authority to them? That's my question. I agree 100%, but I don't think they should be used this way. My issue is, we gave them the authority or we didn't?
Well, but you gave them the authority to determine.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you're the ones who vote on it. That's why it comes here.
And I'd like exactly what you're saying is, we're voting on it. That's us making the decision today on should these funds be used for this purpose. We're voting.
Mr. Korzynski, you didn't work your votes, did you?
I did not. I'm just delivering a message. I concur with the sentiments expressed. I don't center this on the hybrid vehicles. I center it on the fact that we delegated the responsibility and did not say anything about rescinding that. Now that we are going to have a subcommittee, I would ask the commissioner to make sure that a letter is sent to the MPOs and to the NBTA saying that this, our policies, our current policy of delegating that responsibility is being studied, and they should be aware of that and make no presumption that they will have the ability to spend those funds on their own in the future. But I go back to standing on what we allow them to do by delegation. That's why I make this motion, because I think it's not in the spirit of what we want to do, but at the time this decision was made, it was what they were prescribing to our direction.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Aye.
Let the ayes have it. Thank you very much. Any other new items?
Patrick Henry lives.
All right.
Said that.
The conference starts. All right. All right. Your packages for registration are at the back of the room. The conference starts at 3:30. I just want to make sure everyone knows. I'm going to give you a heads up. I'm going to ask every one of you to stand in front of the 300-500 people up there, because I'm going to make sure everyone here in the conference identifies with the PTB members are. So I'm going to be keeping a little checklist as I call it. You don't need socks, the socks, everything else, though, Chef, please wear the rest of it. The socks, all right. So this meeting's adjourned. We'll see you all at the 3:30.
Everyone's package is in the back of the room. Your